So let's kick off this session, which we're calling Professional Minimalism. This is going to be an interesting one. I've been so looking forward to this because this is a real pet subject of mine, a real kind of pet topic, if you like. I mean, I would describe myself as a bit of a devout minimalist, professionally and personally, actually. I really am a strong believer in less is more. And in this particular session today, I want to cover some ideas to get you thinking about how you can gain more by less effort, more sales, if you're in a commercial sense, more value from the time, if you're looking to sort of move away from being chaotic and busy, and a lot of us are right now, and pretty much getting more value from every single day and every single thing that you do. So that is going to be our focus of this session here today. And we're building on previous sessions where we've been talking a lot about kind of personal and professional development. And as I say, this is one that's really, really close to my heart because I have found over the years of really practicing this stuff is I found a huge amount of value in terms of clarity and focus. And if you're a really planful, mindful kind of person, just naturally it's in your DNA, then this will probably be stuff that will really resonate with you. If this is something that is a little bit new to you and you're a little bit more of a spontaneous person, then just bear with me and we'll go through this journey and explore some of the options available to you. And you can see what you think. Some of these things will potentially work for you, and others you might want to spend a little bit more time sort of considering, shall we say, because the whole concept of minimalism isn't for everybody. But if it does resonate with you, then you might find some profound opportunities here for leading a very interesting professional and personal life going forward. Now, we all know the adage or the quote that is sort of historically sort of really, really used in multiple different scenarios, the concept of less is more. And this is really at the heart of minimalism. Minimalism as a concept of less is more, an opportunity for us to really kind of focus in on the things, the objects, the people, the situations, the scenarios, and the time that brings most value. So less is more, less giving us more opportunity to focus where the value is. And I'm going to go into that in quite a lot more detail as we go through this. So this is going to be something that I think we're going to hear as a phrase a lot in this particular presentation. But let's begin really with this whole idea of minimalism, what it is, where it came from, and how we can then start to understand some of the little nuances behind the word minimalist or minimalism that we can then sort of begin to tease out and begin to potentially use in our communication, in our world, in our planning, and in our day-to-day life, professionally and personally. So minimalism is a noun, okay? It's a thing. It began, and the definition of it is that it was a movement in sculpture and painting, which actually arose in the 1950s and was characterized, and for me, this is the interesting bit, by the use of simple, massive forms. Okay, sculpture and painting from the 1950s, characterized by the use of simple, massive forms. To me, that's interesting because when we think about a minimalist lifestyle, it's characterized by the simple, by the use of simple, but very, very significant things. In other words, it's about stripping out the stuff that's not serving you, the stuff that gets in the way, the stuff that's noise. And actually, by focusing purely on the simple things, those very, very few things in number, but also probably in sort of chaos, but actually they become massive. So it's allowing the most significant things to grow. So that's an interesting point one. And the second part of the definition of minimalism as a noun is that it's an avant-garde movement in music characterized, and this is important, by the repetition of very short phrases which change gradually, producing an hypnotic effect. So what do they mean by that? Well, it's basically, it is just some very, very clear, very, very obvious, very, very simple things. So in the music sense, this repetition of very short phrases of music, but they gradually change and evolve and produce an hypnotic effect. So let's think about minimalism then in our day-to-day life. How would we translate that into something that's a bit more practical for us? Okay, so it's about the repetition of simple things that change and evolve gradually, but produce, and it's described here as an hypnotic effect. But if minimalism is something we practice, it creates amazing and very natural daily habits. Okay, so I think we're onto something here. Very natural, very simple, gradually evolving daily habits that are simple but provide massive impact. So the old definition, the old use of this in sculpture, painting, and music can actually be translated into everyday life right here, right now, to give huge amounts of value if we take those little moments, those little things on, and really start to think deeply about them. So if we think about ourselves in a professional sense, doing small, simple acts, delivering small, simple things that have massive impact because they're the highest value, and that because they're short and simple, they become quite hypnotic. They become things that we can practice and become good habits. And because they continually evolve, there's an opportunity within minimalism to grow. So how do we then see that coming through in our kind of thinking and in our day-to-day activities? Well, there is a concept called minimalism psychology. Okay, and I was looking through a definition so I could share this with you. And the nicest one I came across was in Medium.com. And the definition goes a little like this. It says that by forcing us to live intentionally through constant introspection, that's thinking about thinking, and by asking what truly matters, minimalism encourages us to focus less on the deficiencies in our basic needs and more on the things that contribute to our personal growth. In other words, let me rephrase that and reframe it for you. If we focus on the things that focus where we can see personal growth and take out all of the things that distract us, and this is the concept of minimalism, then what we will do is continually grow as individuals, professionally and personally. So this is all about simplicity. This is about stripping out the noise and the chaos. This is about becoming super focused on the things that are adding value. And this in itself, according to this definition of minimalism psychology, will allow us to grow personally. And of course, that's really what we're all after, isn't it? Personal growth. So let's bring this back to the workplace. I've described this session as professional minimalism. In other words, let's think about this from a work and professional commercial context. Okay, so I was looking up some really interesting definitions here to bring to you. And IP Legal was a very, very interesting one because they describe actually minimalism in the workplace as being really helpful for a number of reasons. The physical act of clearing your workspace is a purposeful decision to only incorporate things with actual value. Now you think about your workspace. I mean, look around you. If you're sat in a workspace right here, right now, just look around you. What do you see? Are there things here which don't actually add value? And if you were to physically clear those out as a purposeful action, what would that happen? What would happen as a result of that? Would you see clarity? Would you just see? And would you be experiencing the things that you know are actually going to add value away from the clutter? So you might feel quite nice about that. The quote goes on, the same can be said for the things that take up space in your mind. In other words, minimalism or making these decisions and removing distractions is an exercise in intentionality. So what is that word, intentionality? Well, basically, it's setting a clear intention that I'm going to do less, but I'm going to achieve more. In other words, the things that I do are super focused, almost a laser sharp focus, which will allow me not to have to worry about the stuff that's distracting and just focus where I'm going to get the most value. So there's something lovely about this, surely, isn't there? That minimalism allows us to focus, freeing up potentially time and space for us to do more of the things that add value. And that's what we're going to cover as we go a little bit deeper into this concept, because there's something emerging here that this is about getting more of the stuff that's going to serve you. And of course, this word intentionality, I like that. I'm always about intention, always about exploring kind of where can we take this? What is this thing going to be? And so what we see here is that minimalism shows intent, clarity, and focus to yourself and to others. So once you start kind of observing how you're changing, how you're evolving, because you're beginning to focus, you're beginning to strip away the noise, strip away the chaos, take out those things that aren't serving you, you'll observe it yourself. You'll feel it. You'll feel the difference in clarity and focus, but so will others. And as we know, because we've talked about this before, you get what you give. If you're giving out feelings and intentions of clarity and focus, that will become returned to you. So other people will view you in such a way that, oh, yes, he or she is very, very focused. They've got a real clarity. They just seem to see through things. They don't get cluttered and distracted, and they don't sort of be subservient to the noise. I like that. Right, well, I'll serve back to them in a clear and focused way. So you'll actually get returned to you the things that you're very much putting out there. So minimalism is this kind of reciprocity, where it's a reciprocal kind of trade, if you like, of goodness in terms of clarity and focus. So it's beginning to build here, really kind of, it's almost hard to kind of go through this without feeling quite uplifted, without actually smiling, because this is just lovely. This is a beautiful thing. And think of it this way, performing a task in as simple a way as possible. There's a little quote, lifehack.com. They say, basically, minimalism is performing a task in as simple a way as possible. In other words, why do we spend more time than we need to? Why do we get distracted? Why do we, you know, procrastinate over stuff when we could just do the simple thing? We could just take the simple action. We could just do it in a simple way. So there's a lot of opportunity here for just doing less, but achieving more. And that's where I think we need to take this conversation. And so I'm going to start to think now about some of the ways and areas where you could do this if you choose to take on this journey. And of course, one of the big advocates, one of the big kind of proponents, if you like, of this whole sort of simplifying things was Steve Jobs. His kind of phrase that he would always be quoting internally and externally was simplifying complexity. He saw that as his mantra. That was his role, his higher purpose, if you like, and the value that he brought to the world, simplifying complexity. And of course, you know, we all know the whole design, the whole journey that you go through when you look and feel and experience an Apple product. It is complexity simplified, simplified for the end user. And, you know, this is not a new thing. You know, minimalism in this way of kind of creating products and services and things that we can consume and use isn't new. You know, Albert Einstein was a minimalist. Leonardo da Vinci, in his great thinking and his great creative works, was a minimalist. And one of the great Roman emperors, Marcus Aurelius, was a minimalist. So we've had this thing called minimalism for thousands and thousands of years. But it's only now that we're beginning to really see, and I say now, over the last couple of decades, we're beginning to see it really manifest successfully and succinctly in a commercial sense or in a professional sense. So it is now here available to all of us if we wish to take the first steps in simplifying the complexity in the work or the job or the career or the literally day-to-day activities that we have. And we see lots of examples already. If you're in or you look at the manufacturing world, you know, there are many, many opportunities to look at minimalism, because that really is one of the concepts that really is at the heart of a lot of the manufacturing models that a number of us have kind of grown up with in a professional sense. When you think about continuous improvement, Kaizen, for example, is a lovely model to go and explore. So you can search on that if that is of interest. Lean workflow, as it's called, Kanban, a Japanese principle that was all about actually stripping out all of the things that you don't need in the moment, so that enables you to focus on just what you need right here, right now. wonderful, wonderful lean manufacturing. And of course, a lot of that stuff we can read across into day-to-day workflows and day-to-day lifestyles in any kind of work that we do. You know, simplifying the process, making things lean, only taking the tools to the job that we actually need for that job, not kind of wastage. You know, wastage is something that, you know, none of us can afford to do. Wastage of time, wastage of, you know, natural resources, wastage of, you know, resources within our businesses. None of us can afford this now. So lean workflow, lean process is really, really key. And if you're looking to develop, maybe you're in a startup or something like that, or you're looking to develop a new product or service, the concept of MVP, minimum viable product. You don't need 1,000 features of your product to make it successful. Taking on the minimalist approach would be, well, okay, how many would be viable? What are the minimum number of features from my product or service that still provide the vast majority of the value of the product? And generally, when you think of a lot of the products that we use on a day-to-day basis, they can probably do 1,000 things. We probably only use 2 or 3 things regularly. So that is the minimum viable product. So why not focus on that? The rest is wastage. The rest is chaos. So MVP is super, super important as a concept if we're thinking about creating something new. And if you're in a role where you're not making something, you're not developing a new product or service, but what you might be doing is maybe representing your organization's social media, or, you know, improvements to the website that you have, just taking that as an example. Well, look at something called critical path analysis. That is something that says, okay, what are the least number of steps I can take my customer on to engage with them enough that they'll be convinced to buy my product or service? And then the minimum number of steps I can take them on beyond that purchase to developing a loyal and advocating relationship with them so that they'll come back and engage with me in the future. This is critical path analysis, analyzing the critical path to take your customer through that is a minimum path, but just enough to get the relationship there and just enough for them to build the trust in you that you're a good person or a good brand to deal with. But no wastage. Don't give them too many clicks. Don't serve them with too much content or information that they don't really need. So there are many, many practical examples of process. And that is one of the things that minimalism professionally can bring to you, is a simplification of the processes and the systems that you might already be using. So really important to think about, what is it I'm doing on a day-to-day basis? What is it I'm producing? And so what we're talking about really here is this word productivity. And there are lots of ways that minimalism can boost your work productivity. Of course, some of this stuff applies to your personal life as well. And it's, again, stripping out the stuff that doesn't serve you, the lower priorities things, the things that don't add the value that you're looking to achieve in your working or personal day. So the first thing would be to write a daily to-do list. And a lot of us, you know, do that, and we can see them very, very quickly that, okay, there's 10 things on my list of things to do today. But if I work my way down this prioritized list of what's going to add value strategically, what's going to add value because it's an urgent thing to do, down towards the bottom of the list, there's 3 or 4 things that actually I could do with probably not doing. They're a bit of a distraction. They're a should do rather than a must do. There's another nice little filter for you. The must, should, could filter. Yeah, I could do them, but I'm probably not going to. I should do them means I'm probably feeling obliged to do them, but there's little value. But if I just focus on the must things, wow, there's a productive day. So there's my daily to-do list, focusing only on the must things. Park the should and could items on your list, because if they're important, they will rise to the surface as must-do things in the future. And if they don't, there's your sign that they weren't worth doing anyway. So identifying the essential tasks, cutting out the non-essential tasks, and then starting to give yourself then, by doing that, the ability to focus and defeat distractions. If you give yourself space to think about this stuff, remember that word I used earlier, introspection, the thinking about thinking. Introspection is your friend. If you can give yourself space and time to just pause for breath, just stop, just pause and look for a moment at the things that you might have been distracted by. So the little email that popped up, should I be doing that? Or I need to check my Facebook feed, or let's have a quick little look in TikTok. It will only take me a few moments. It's just a bit of fun. And then what happens? 30 minutes later, you realize, I've just wasted a huge percentage of my day. So this is what we're talking about focusing and defeating distractions. And I'll give you a few little tools that you can use to try and do that a little bit later. And it is about turning these tasks into good daily habits. Distractions are not your friend when it comes to minimalism. So building the daily habit of reminding yourself that this is not serving you, reminding yourself that this is not providing value, and that will actually help. And it will help as well, not only to achieve the priority things on that daily to-do list, but also to stretch time. Because if by chunking your life down into little daily bite-sized tasks, little daily bite-sized actions or meetings or encounters or building of relationships or doing of things in certain places, you will find that by chunking time, time stretches. It's a perception of stretching because obviously we all only have 24 hours in the day, but the perception of stretch time can come from taking this approach. And it really does. Changing your situation, even turning around and facing in the other direction if you can't leave the room or your desk, can change and stretch your perception of time. And again, if that is happening, what value does that bring to your world? Again, more space, more clarity, and more focus to do the things that are adding value. I'm going to talk a little bit later about the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. And that rule tells you that as you're looking to plan your work productivity, that you will get 80-20, all right? So you will get 80% of the value from 20% of the things that you do. Just think about that for a moment. 80% of the value comes from 20% of the things that you will do. And it is the law. It is just what happens. You can go and test this for yourself if you don't believe me. 80-20 always works. So the trick, obviously, then, is as you're prioritizing, you're figuring out what are the 20% of things I can do that are going to give me 80% of the value. Because if I'm now only spending 20% of my time doing this stuff, what have I just figured out? That I've already achieved 80% of what I needed, but look at the time that I've freed up. The space that allows me to take more regular breaks, to go for that walk around the park, to go to the gym, to have that conversation with somebody I haven't caught up with in ages. Minimalism can really, really work. It allows you to prioritize, allows you to stretch time, allows you to get the value from fewer things that are going to achieve so much more. And I'll explain what you can do with that additional time in just a moment. So let's look at that's your kind of productivity and your workflow as you go through the day. So let's spend a little bit of time thinking about your business then, your brand, because we're looking at this from a professional minimalism perspective. So your minimalist brand, your minimalist business brand, let's think about that. We know a lot of minimalist logos, for example. We think about the Apple logo, the Nike logo, the McDonald's logo. What do they tell you? Well, they tell you there's a consistency. They are instantly identifiable. They are kind of seen visibly and very easily in whatever medium or form, both online and in the real world. And they're described as the deliberate simplification of a design as a deliberately style that is suited to our modern lives. So minimalism in branding, think about your own brand for a moment, the kind of the tone of voice that you have, the way you convey what it is you do. If it's not minimalist, people will not understand, or people will lose the interest in you. They will not spend the time because our attention spans are down to a flash moment in time. We don't have the time or desire anymore as human beings to spend significant amounts of time trying to figure the other person or the brand out. If we don't get it in a snapshot moment, we move on to an alternative where we are served in that way. So we've got to be very careful thinking about our brands. Can we make sure that our brands are deliberately simplified? so that we understand them using simple shapes, color palettes, typesetting as a deliberate style suited to the way that we now consume information. Because then we can make sure that we're in the right places at the right time and actually conveying the right kinds of messages. And there are many, many brands. I mean, if you look at, say, for the fashion industry and the way that that has reinvented itself over recent years, you know, you've just got to look at the different ways that brands like Saint Laurent, Balenciaga, Burberry, Berluti, you know, a whole range of different brands who have really simplified the way that they project themselves. And you just look at their logos, for example, the graphic stylization of how they project themselves. They are super, super simple. Gone are the flashy, you know, sort of typefaces and fonts that were, you know, prevalent 10, 15 years ago. And now it is just simple. It does what it says on the tin. Simplicity is everything. And this is at the heart of minimalism. So if we're seeing it in a lot of these brands, and I've just taken the fashion industry there as just a very brief example, we can see it everywhere. And you can think about this as well. If you think about your own personal brand and how, when you communicate with others, when you try and influence others, if you're in a communications role, if you're in a customer facing role, or if you're looking to make that next step on your career journey, you know, your personal brand needs to be minimalist. It needs to be something that people can understand the look and feel of your personal brand very quickly. They can get your personal style, your tone of voice, the way you dress, the kind of equipment that you use, the way that you're seen online, your social media profiles, everything about you needs to have a look and a hook. Okay, think of those two things. Do I have a look and a hook? Am I instantly identifiable away from the crowd? Because if I'm just part of a crowd, how can I cut through? How can I get my messages then? How can I get people's attention and retain that attention? And why are brands going minimalist? Because minimalism leaves something to think about and something to feel. It's a lovely quote there. Minimalism leaves something to think about and something to feel. In other words, your personal brand, as well as your business commercial brand, needs to be instantly identifiable and away from the crowd, but also subconsciously on a lot of levels, leaving people with an impression of who you are, what you are, and enough of a hook that retains their interest. So this is getting super interesting now, because we're starting to see it play out, not only in, you know, a business sense, but also in a personal sense for you as a human being. Minimalism can really be part and parcel of everything that you're doing professionally. And of course, when we start to kind of build this personal brand, we've got to think about our stuff and the things that we do, our behaviors and our activities in a professional sense. So can we minimalize our stuff? Are we still printing things out? And of course, you know, a lot of us now are retaining everything digitally. So we're storing stuff really effectively and efficiently in the cloud. We've probably thought about reorganizing our desktop and our digital filing systems. We've probably cleared out all of the social networks that used to be a thing, but no longer a thing. We're only now focusing on the ones where we can really see a difference, or where we can really start to see the social in social networking still happening. We might also have started removing the trinkets of everyday life. I mean, if you think about your desk, like I talked about earlier, you know, are there things there that are kind of a little bit distracting? You know, back in the day, people used to personalize their workspace, their physical workspace, to make it almost feel like home. That is not in vogue right now. The idea is to complete your work, complete your tasks, so that you can actually go home and actually live the life at home. And if home is now working from home, so that you can leave the office that you have at home and actually get on with your day-to-day life. So rather than having lots of trinkets to kind of remind you of the stuff you're missing, let's get minimalist. Let's complete the tasks and the projects and the things that we need to do, so we can actually go and live that life, not just still miss it with the trinkets around us. So do you see where we're going with this? You know, it is it's a really, really, really fine habit of actually, you know, focusing in so that we can actually do more of the stuff we really want to be doing. So So by removing the distractions, the trinkets and all of that noise, once we've completed our tasks, then we can go and do the stuff that we want to be doing. Super simple. So why aren't more of us doing it? And there's a couple of little things I'd like you to kind of think about here. I would challenge you to take it to the level of, could you live from a backpack? Could you live from a backpack? Professionally, I'm talking about here. Could you strip out everything that you don't really need down to things that you really do need? So the tools of your trade. So if those are physical tools or if they're digital tools, could you live out of a backpack? And if you're already doing that, could you streamline the backpack so it's even smaller? Because that's what we're talking about here. Rather than having a backpack that's full of great big rocks and pebbles and stones that you have to carry around, and you think, oh, this is a real burden, but look at me, this is all my stuff. Actually freeing yourself up from that would mean you could travel lighter. And what would that mean? I'm talking metaphorically here, but what would that mean for you, living professionally in a minimalist way? And one of the lovely little tools that, or techniques rather, that I use personally whenever I'm moving, so physically moving home, or when I'm looking to declutter, or when I'm having that kind of annual review with myself about how things are going professionally and what my plans are for the coming year, my sort of little mantra for myself is that if you haven't used it in a year and it isn't a true memento, recycle it. Get rid of it. You don't need it. If you haven't used it in a year and it isn't a memento, recycle it. And I've done that with house moves, and it's amazing how little now I can actually move with. It really does work. Minimalism allows you then to travel light in life, professionally and personally. It means that you're not weighed down with the stuff that was, and let's be honest here, often it's a comfort blanket. Do you really need that comfort blanket? Because if you've got the things that are the true things that add value, then you've got enough. Remember that 80-20 rule? You probably could do it anyway. So this is interesting, isn't it? There's lots of things in here that are going to allow you to make conscious choices in decluttering. So it is stuff, physical stuff, but it's also emotional stuff that once you've decluttered physically, begins to open up opportunities to release things that potentially were holding you back. And that is, for me, one of the really, really lovely things about minimalism, is that there's pretty much nothing to hold you back, because the only things you retain are the things that are serving you. So it's lovely. And on a day-to-day basis, then, what is this opening up? Well, it's opening up, rolling this kind of approach out into everything that you do. I mean, let's think of meetings, for example, one of the banes of so many people's lives. It used to be bad enough when we were in offices, but now we've got blended work styles, or we're working from home, and it's that next team meeting, or it's that next Zoom call, or it's, oh, another meeting. Well, what could you do about meetings to make them more minimalist? One of the lovely things I learned many years ago in a particular organization was that we weren't allowed, it was a cultural thing, we weren't allowed to have meetings sitting down, because what that would do is it would mean that the meetings went on longer because people got comfortable. So we had to have meetings standing up. And it's amazing how that made the meetings focused, more dynamic, better energy flow, but really, really, really much more task oriented, rather than just, oh, we'll just ease ourselves back in the chair, waste a little bit of the day. It meant that it was very, very project or task orientated. So your meetings, stand up, don't sit down. Multitasking. Think about that. Multitasking is distracting, slows you down, impairs executive functioning, and increases mistakes, according to verywellmind.com. It's not a possibility to multitask. Our brains simply do not do it. And you're kidding yourself if you think you can multitask. What you're doing is actually you're doing very, very short bursts of individual things and binding them together to make it feel like you're multitasking. But actually what you're doing is you're being constantly distracted by the next task that you feel you're multitasking. So slowing down, chunking of things, focusing on a single task, allows your mind and your subconscious mind to play catch up so that you can focus and complete that task without feeling and convincing yourself and kidding yourself you're actually getting more done. When the research consistently and constantly says that this thing does not work. So minimalism in task prioritization. And also, when it comes back to meetings, just ask yourself why. If you're not going to make any contribution to a meeting, or you're not going to see value come back to you, do not attend. Meetings where you're just saying yes because you've been invited to the meeting and it was your boss, so you don't feel like you can say no, that's not the right reason to attend the meeting. You're now practicing this professionally minimalist lifestyle. So now, if you're not going to add value, you're not going to see a contribution, you're not going to get something out of it, you're not going to be able to give in it, you politely excuse yourself from the meeting because you have a higher priority thing to focus on, which of course you do. So always be asking yourself why. This comes back to the introspection. Challenge yourself at all points in every decision. Is there a neater, slicker, quicker, cheaper, more efficient way I can do this? And if it is by saying no, then saying no is the answer. Isn't this getting interesting now? You're starting to strip away all of the stuff that you know hasn't been necessarily serving you. And if you're in a sales or marketing role, think about your sales for a minute. We've talked about the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle. Well, why are you going out talking to 100 customers when you know that 20% of your customers will give you 80% of the sales that you need? Go and check your customer database and you'll see that to be true. Pareto is an incredible 19th century economist who figured out this rule, 80-20. 20% of your customers will give you 80% of your sales or 80% of your margin or your profits. However you want to define it, 80-20 works. There's minimalism in action. Focus on the 20% because then 80% will happen automatically from that. Simplify your spending as well. Here's a lovely little thing to challenge whether or not you are over consuming. This is all part and parcel of minimalism. Ask yourself, is this a need or is this a want? If it's a need, it might make it into the spend. If it's a want, you need to challenge yourself why you want it. And if it's to impress others, I think we know where that one's going to go. So simplifying your spending and consuming. The question is it a need or is it a want? The needs make it professionally and in a minimalist way. The wants don't make it. And of course, if you're very results orientated, what you're doing is you're not spending time being busy. That is the bane of people at work, isn't it? I mean, you know this. You know, when you're busy, you don't feel like you're really achieving. Well, it's because you're busy. We don't need to be busy to succeed. I can remember a particular example at work when there was one organization many years ago where people, and I have to admit, and I'll put my hand up, I did this only on one occasion because it was so embarrassing. I didn't get caught out, but it was so embarrassing. We used to leave our coats on the back of our chairs as we left for the day to give the impression we were still somewhere in the office and hadn't actually left. Because the culture was, if you're not busy, you're not effective. And really what it should have been was, are you effective and are you delivering results? But busy was equated to results. And of course it isn't at all. And this brings us back to the whole thing is if you're providing a service, so you're part of a service industry, value-based pricing. So actually pricing the value of the return of what it is you do, not the time spent. We spend too much time valuing time, and it isn't about time spent, it's about the outcome. If I can solve your problem within 10 minutes based on my knowledge, that is more valuable than if I waste our collective 2 days of activity and then send you an even bigger bill. Why would I do that? If I can do it in 10 minutes, pay me for 10 minutes. Don't pay me for 2 days of activity. It's just not worth it. And there's minimalism coming through again. Less is definitely more. So you can see how many examples we can conjure up here. It's absolutely incredible. And from a marketing and advertising perspective, here we see it all over the place. And I want to focus in on these because I know a lot of you listening to this are marketers, because I know from the statistics, because I monitor who's listening to this. So I know that this will resonate with you. Here's a really, really nice one. Although minimalism is not a universal remedy for all advertising problems, it's a great way to get audiences to focus on a single message. brkmarketing.com. So I would say, and this is how it can take sort of shape in a practical sense, is if you have plotted out your customer's journey, so the step-by-step process by which your customer engages with you, could you at every single step Give them just one call to action decision to make. So rather than loading with them with loads of choice, loads of options, loads of, you know, things that you kind of think, oh, this would be really good because then they could choose this and I've got this over here to show them and all this noise and chaos, is it any wonder they don't click through and they go somewhere else? A binary choice is a minimalist choice, but it's the surefire way to get somebody to choose. So you've got me onto the page, give me an option. Option A or option B? Oh, I'll go for option B then, because that's slightly better than option A. Rather than give me A, B, C, D, E, F, hold on, which one am I going to choose? We've all been there. So one call to action to every step in the customer journey. Simple, minimalist marketing. Binary choices, A or B. I'm going to go for A. Okay. And then the next step, A or B. B, please, at this step. And off you go. In advertising, minimalism refers to the strategic use of extended white, high aesthetics, less text and graphics, and a resistance towards anything excessive. Okay, it believes in providing a transparent, modest design that limits potential distraction, challenging the ornamentation and noise of traditional advertising. Beautiful quote there from cityspidey.com. Love that. Challenging the noise of traditional advertising. It's a hard thing to do. If you've been brought up with give your customer everything and let them choose, this is the antithesis of this. This is the, no, I'm going to actually hold your hand and actually give you binary choices because I know it's going to be easier for you. And so don't load your marketing with everything that's possible. Help your customer to make choices, because ultimately that will build the faith and the loyalty and the trust in that you are the right organizational brand or person to deal with. And what's not to like? That ultimately is why we're here. So of course, all of these things then tie into time. This is one of the things that I've really been sort of focusing on as a thread throughout what I've been talking about. So we already know, and you can look up the research, you already know that you can't multitask. So do stop trying, okay? Minimalism is about splitting things down into individual single tasks that you will do. It's not about trying to multitask. Get focused, get specific. And that's Harvard Business Review and some of the research that they've done and reported on. Stop copying everyone into your emails. If you could, for a day, just see if you can get away without putting anybody into the CC or blind CC boxes. For them, that would be minimalist. If they don't qualify as being in the to-do or to box, in other words, the direct recipient of the email, all you're doing is you're cluttering their inboxes. And you know how that feels. So minimalist emailing. Stop copying everyone into your emails. Only post to people on a to basis and see what happens. You know, you might be thinking, oh, yeah, I know, but I've got to keep these people and these people informed and advised. My question to you is, do you? Is that just a habit? Or is that something that you can actually demonstrate serves value? Because in a lot of time, people aren't reading. If you're copied into something, you haven't been tasked with doing it, you probably haven't read it anyway. But what does that do? It takes up server space. In other words, there's a carbon footprint, but also it's a distraction and it takes people time to delete or to junk or to file away that pointless email. So let's get specific, even down to the level of an individual email. And where you can, this is beautiful professional minimalism, automate or delegate. If you can focus only on where you add true value as a human being professionally and automate everything else, delegate everything else, then what you're doing is you are really practicing what you're preaching. You're really practicing this in a really, really true sense, because otherwise you're just guessing and playing. But the more you can strip out, automate it or delegate it, get it away from your desk, will give you that clarity to come up with the next big idea, to be spending your time in a space and a place that really is going to serve you. And what do you do then with the rest of your time? Well, I love the Pomodoro technique, which basically says, okay, set out your task to-do list, okay, and then work for 25 minutes. And that's a specific there, 25 minutes or one Pomodoro on the first task on your list, okay? Record your progress, then take a short break, okay? You're not allowed to do this for 30 minutes or 35 minutes just because it takes a bit longer. You stop at 25, Okay, take a short break, and that is go and grab a coffee, walk around the block, just go and have a little focus on the distance rather than just on a screen distance away from you. So don't go reading a book if you've been working on the screen. You know, get outside and focus in onto the horizon, something like that. So it feels like a proper break. Go and talk to somebody. And then after the short break, come back to work and repeat. And repeat twice. So after you've done three of these 25-minute bursts or three Pomodoros, then you can take a longer break. Maybe that's a lunch break, or maybe it's a proper coffee break, and you're actually going to leave the room or leave the building. This is a great way to do the chunking of time. Getting into the habit of doing this, you will find you will become super productive, because, of course, what you're not allowing yourself to do in that time is get distracted by emails, by social media. And if actually in your breaks, you choose to be distracted consciously by those things, then great, that's fine. But what you know you've already done is you've attended to and given the appropriate priority to the things that were most important on your priority list. So at the end of the day, you look back at the progress you've made and you think, wow, that was a productive day. How is that going to feel as you start to prepare for the following day? It's going to feel great. And you'll know then that you're starting to build good daily habits, which is really what this is all about. And so when we're doing this, of course, we are including digital. So we are including the time that is sort of where we are, in effect, glued to our devices. And as a species, as human beings, we are glued to our devices. So cutting out things that don't bring value to you in your digital life is just as important. Okay, and you can also apply minimalism to your feelings, your emotions, your relationships. Yes, I said it, your relationships. So if there are people professionally and personally who are not being served by the time that you're spending and the time you've decided to prioritize, you can remove those people from the mix as well. And this takes real conscious effort. You might think, yes, but aren't they going to feel offended? It's, of course, how you do it is the next level of detail. I've got the time here to talk about that today. But you should be doing it. Relationships, emotions, feelings, tasks, habits, you know, priorities, all of this stuff comes into minimalism. So you can strip out those relationships that no longer serve you. Do the must, should, could process, that must, should, could filter. You know, keep obviously in the mix the people and relationships that you must retain because they're valuable in both ways. The shoulds, for a rainy day maybe, yeah, I'll keep them on my in my little black book or on my phone contact list, but we probably won't be arranging a meeting anytime soon. And the coulds, I think let them slip. You haven't got time for them because you're prioritizing where the value is returned in your relationships as much as your feelings and your emotions and your tasks. So it pervades everything and everywhere. And this, to me, is the beauty of it. Once you open this little opportunity, this little Pandora's box of stuff that you can do, what you're doing is you're opening up the opportunity to make this really, really clear for both work and personal life. And what you'll see is that there'll be clear transitions between the activities and responsibilities that you're doing. So you will be able to draw clearer lines between the various things that you do. And so what you're doing is you're freeing up more time to do the good stuff because you've stripped out the annoying, the detrimental, or the chaotic stuff that doesn't serve you. And of course, by freeing up that time, you can then do more of what you want to be doing. And if the job is done, the task is complete, get out onto the beach, go surfing, whatever it is that you want to be doing, you'll have more time to do it. Because you're taking control. Minimalism is all about taking control, introspecting, thinking about thinking, allowing yourself the space to plan this stuff. Because as we know, 80-20 rule and less is more. So the more you do this professionally, the more benefit you'll also see personally. And one of the big questions, and this is what I want to leave you with at the end of this, hopefully, little Pandora's box that I've opened for you now, is I want to leave you with a question. And this is the question, not only from the planet's perspective and from a social perspective and from a green or carbon footprint perspective, but I want to kind of challenge you that if you're kind of a little bit on the fence still as to whether going minimalist is a good thing, I'm going to ask you the question, and this is a rhetorical question for you to think about. Is this now the time to become less of a consumer of stuff, consumer of product, consumer of people's time, a consumer of energy in the truest sense of the word, a consumer of the planet's resources? Because, of course, minimalism sits beautifully with reducing your carbon footprint. It can, you know, sit beautifully with just doing less, but the things that you decide to retain, you've consciously decided to retain them because they're the right things to do.